You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of ICAC 2007, the 47th Annual InterScience Conference on Antimicrobial Agents and Chemotherapy. The conference took place in Chicago, Illinois, from September 17th through September 20th, 2007.
Welcome, this is Bonnie Goldman, Editorial Director of The Body Pro. I'm here in Chicago at ICAC 2007 with Dr. Joseph Aron, Professor of Medicine at the University of North Carolina. I was wondering if you could comment about some of the other highlights of this conference.
So I think a couple of big HIV highlights were, one, we saw 48-week data on maraviroc from the MOTIVATE-1 trial. And I think that was also really encouraging because the CCR5 inhibitors, I think everybody has a little bit of concern. Do patients all have those X4 viruses at some low level? And what we saw is really the proportion below 50 copies really was absolutely sustained from 24 to 48 weeks. So I thought that was a really important presentation. We also saw a comparison between darunavir-ritonavir and lopinavir-ritonavir in treatment-naive patients, the so-called Artemis trial, which kind of the top-line result is that darunavir-ritonavir, both of them were combined with tenofovir-FTC, was non-inferior or almost the same. But in fact, the proportion less than 50 copies at 48 weeks was actually higher in the patients that were treated with darunavir-ritonavir. Didn't quite reach statistical significance. But if you looked at the patients with the highest viral loads above 100,000, you actually saw a significantly better effect of darunavir-ritonavir compared to lopinavir-ritonavir in combination with tenofovir and FTC. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to change things. I mean, lopinavir-ritonavir, you know, comes in one pill. It's pretty convenient. We like darunavir because it's active against highly resistant variants. So I'm not sure how this is going to affect clinicians yet, but it certainly proved that, you know, darunavir-ritonavir was quite effective in treatment-naive patients.
Uh-huh. And Titan also showed the same thing. So
Titan was a head-to-head comparison in kind of modestly treatment-experienced patients. And again, showing a very similar thing that actually in that study, darunavir-ritonavir was actually superior to lopinavir-ritonavir in the overall analysis. That study, you know, there were people who were entered in the study that had lopinavir resistance. So I think, you know, any clinician, if we had a patient that on phenotype had lopinavir resistance, we wouldn't be putting them on lopinavir. So I think we have to look at that trial carefully. But you're right. Again, head-to-head with kind of one of our standards, lopinavir-ritonavir, and darunavir-ritonavir looked at least as good, if not better, in both Titan and Artemis.
Uh-huh. So any other highlights that struck you? Did you like the IL-2?
I thought the IL-2 was very interesting. So this was a trial where patients who had not yet been treated or had minimal previous treatment were given IL-2 to kind of forestall starting antiretroviral therapy. And it wasn't a giant trial, but it was a pretty big trial, and it seemed to delay the need for antiretroviral therapy in the majority of the patients, significantly delayed. And you might say, well, IL-2, it's expensive, it's toxic, but really, you know, it was given in a couple of series, and then it really only had to be given like once a year, I think, in some of the patients. So it's a possible strategy. It was intriguing. I think we need to see a little bit more, maybe a little bit larger data set, but that was intriguing. I think that we're seeing more data today on some of these non-AIDS-defining illnesses, like non-AIDS-defining malignancies and non-AIDS-defining serious medical illnesses, and perhaps there's a relationship to CD4 cell count. So I think the flavor that we've got from IAS and a little bit here at ICAC is perhaps we should be treating patients a little bit earlier. No hard data, like no comparative trial, but I think that's the flavor I think I'm getting from these meetings.
Uh-huh. So what's the new CD4 count that treatment initiation should be started at, do you think?
Well, this is just a personal opinion. I certainly think that patients who reach 350 CD4 cells should definitely start therapy, unless there are always issues, and every patient is an individual, obviously. But in my practice, you know, when patients start getting below 500, I start talking to them about, you know, maybe it's getting time to think about starting therapy. So somewhere I think between 350 and 500 is where my practice is. But I wouldn't be surprised over the next 5 years that moves up even higher. We'll see.
So do you think the guidelines that will soon be released, I hope, will reflect that?
I'm not part of the guidelines panel. I have friends that are on the guidelines panel, and I know it's a very active discussion. That's the best I can tell. I don't know what they're going to decide. I really don't know. Because there is no, we don't have any hard data yet. So I think it'll be a matter of opinion. But I think the guidelines will probably come out a little bit more strongly with starting earlier. But I doubt it'll be a firm recommendation. But that's just my guess.
Uh-huh. I guess one more question about all these new antiretrovirals. What are the metabolic ramifications? I mean, do they look a lot better? Is there hope that there will be less fat accumulation and fat wasting?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've seen lipid data with maraviroc. We've seen lipid data with raltegravir, and that looks very promising. Thinking back, we really didn't see the problems with the protease inhibitors or D4T until people were kind of on therapy for, you know, more than just 24 weeks. We started recognizing it over years. So I'm cautiously optimistic. But I think, you know, at least the early signs are that these drugs are unlikely to have substantial metabolic effects. But we have to wait and see to be sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dr. Aron.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on ICAC 2007 from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/ICAAC2007.